All right. We're back. Welcome to a special episode of Cannabis Insider. Maybe there's a reason they kicked me off this show and put you on instead, Potter. But for the fun of it, so Javier and I got to do an interview. I believe it was released on Friday with the CEO of Ascend Wellness Holdings, John Hartman. Make sure to check that out. That was a phenomenal interview. Really nice insights on new markets, on new brands. Make sure to check that out. But we're not done talking about how companies have performed or going international, maybe domestic.
That's right.
Yeah, but we'll just say for now we're going international with our friends over at SNDL with Zach George, their CEO, is joining us today. Pato, I'm excited for this one.
Oof, of course, yes. Especially after looking at their earnings report, which massively surpassed the forecast. So yeah, I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation.
Absolutely. All right. Well, without further ado, enough of me misspeaking on the title of our show. Let's bring over Zach George, CEO of Sundial, SNDL on the NASDAQ.
Let's go.
Welcome to Cannabis Insider, Zach. Glad to have you. but excited, man. I mean, it seems like congrats are in order for a great quarter. Talk a little bit about it. What's your initial reaction?
Thanks, Elliot. And thanks, gentlemen. Happy to be here and chat with you today. Thanks for the opportunity.
Of course. Glad to have you, my friend. Well, you know, so talk about 4% increase year over year, but you know, some really nice numbers here. Talk about what went into this.
Sure. So we, if you look at our progress through year end of 2023, we actually had put up a compound annual growth rate on revenue north of 120%. That's obviously slowed down somewhat materially from that level on a quarter over quarter basis. But we have a lot of initiatives going on internally. And most importantly for us, we reached a record gross profit margin of 25%. And we're seeing some record results across our segments that are really all-time performance records for the business. Still have a lot of wood to chop. Our teams are hard at work making high quality decisions. And so our goals are a far cry from where we stand today, but we're pleased to be making solid progress.
Awesome. Now, real quick, I'm sure Pato has a number of questions, as do I, but can you just clarify a little bit about the different segments of SNDL for maybe people that are new to your company? You know, you work in both cannabis and liquor distribution, correct?
That's correct. So in Canada, we are the largest private market distributor of both cannabis and liquor. Our three operating segments in order of ranking them by revenue size would be our liquor segment, cannabis retail, and then cannabis operations, which include our cultivation and manufacturing activities upstream. And then we have an investment segment where we've deployed over $500 million Canadian into a series of U.S. investments on a structured and secured basis.
Thank you very much. That's a pretty awesome deployment. And actually, I was thinking about your gross profit numbers, which again, I think around 25% gross margin, which is a really big number. I wanted to ask you what measures or maybe market conditions have contributed to this profitability.
Well, this quarter, we were quite pleased to show the validation of our Q1 2023 acquisition of Valens. When I first became the CEO of SNDL in Q1 of 2020, I had inherited what was the largest pure indoor cultivation and processing facility in Canada. Because of its location in Alberta and the volatility and power prices that we were seeing, that facility was non-competitive. And so we've been able to exit our high cost cultivation and exposure to that power market and replace quite a significant amount of that exposure with an aggressive procurement strategy, which has really dropped the bottom out of our COGS, where we're able to take advantage of the oversupply in Canada and acquire biomass and flower, in some cases, well below the marginal cost of production.
Mm-hmm. Right, that makes sense. And regarding the, I mean, I was reading also the earnings report, and you, there was a quote from you, I think, about the debt-free status. So I was wondering, now that you have achieved debt-free status, with a substantial unrestricted cash and investments, how does this financial flexibility impact your future plans?
We are looking at a number of interesting opportunities to deploy capital, always with our current implied cost of capital in mind. Having the flexibility with a debt-free balance sheet in what is, in certain cases, an oversupplied and overtaxed market is a significant advantage. We also have significant capital that we expect to come back to us, which will add to our current unrestricted cash balances as some of our U.S. credit exposure is amortized and monetized over the next 12 to 24 months. So we have access to capital, cash on the balance sheet, and access to credit as well. So we're really focused on the disciplined deployment of that capital, not looking to grow for the sake of growth, but rather look at profitable growth to build on some of the successes we've had after a very active acquisitive period over the last 2 years.
Can you chat, you know, in terms of the actual operational side, you know, in cannabis, there is a certain seasonality to it, maybe not extreme, you know, but in terms of quarters, it may fluctuate, you know, just given on, you know, holidays, given on a lot of different reasons and Croptober, whatever you want to say, you know, with liquor, you know, a big part of your balance sheet, right? So does it display a similar seasonality as cannabis in terms of performance, or do you see those two sides of your business operating in their own time schedules? Does that question make sense for you?
It makes absolute sense. And yes, the simple answer is there is seasonality that we are experiencing and witnessing in cannabis retail. A slightly different dynamic than liquor, different consumer patterns. But there is certainly a seasonality where the holiday period would be a peak. Summer activity is strong, and there can tend to be a hangover and more muted activity earlier in the year. There has been a bit made of this dynamic and discussion around it post our earnings. What I would just point out is that in Canada, there are very, very few publicly listed retail comps on the cannabis side. And for those competitors that may have been very active in opening doors, say in Q4, with new revenue being generated in the Q1, you really won't see that seasonality hitting the top line quite as much. And while we do have a robust pipeline of both organic and acquisitive options to build our cannabis retail portfolio, we didn't have that much activity in Q4. So it was slightly more pronounced, you know, in terms of top line results in Q1.
Wonderful. You know, and along those lines, this isn't really necessarily related to your earnings. You know, they're in the U.S. side of things, you know, there's a lot of talk around, you know, hemp derived Delta 9 beverages, you know, and, you know, in keeping with the beverage market that has taken off just due to the general accessibility, you know, of them in the U.S., but also a big focus for them in the U.S. is getting in with distribution on the alcohol side, on the liquor side, you know, and getting in with those distributors, for instance, in Minnesota, carrying THC beverages and Total Wine, or, you know, whatever example it may be, Publix or Sheetz, you know, the gas station chain, or, you know, maybe GTI and Circle K in the near future, who knows, right? But, you know, those types of hemp accessible distribution, is that something you all think about in Canada? Do you all want to combine both perhaps one side of the plant or multiple sides of the plant plus your liquor distribution? Or how are you looking at those sides of your business and how they might commingle?
There's a couple questions in there. From a high level, you really have to start with the regulatory framework in these various regions. And so starting with Canada, is there a logic to have THC beverages included in a regulated framework for liquor retail distribution? I would say absolutely yes. Our Canadian provincial and federal governments don't see it that way today, but the evolution of the beverage space in the US will certainly be something that they're watching and will provide significant data that I think will be valuable in assessing next steps. And I think the one of the best arguments is really around harm reduction. So if governments want to provide other options to consumers besides hard spirits or on the cannabis side, you know, inhalable products, THC beverages is an interesting, you know, option there. That's one side of it. The other side is looking at this rapid proliferation. I would just slightly correct what you said. I mean, the future is here. It's now. Whether it's a Trader Joe's in Connecticut or, you know, what we're seeing in the Texas market, which has a very limited and stunted medical market today. The proliferation of these hemp products is something you just can't look away from. So we're spending a lot of time looking at that dynamic. It would be very interesting, and I know there's also a huge kind of anti hemp and Delta 8, you know, lobbying effort that's mounting in certain areas. But it would be really interesting if the proliferation of hemp infused beverages is actually what it takes to break the logjam, you know, on the THC side and finally get real production volumes and distribution of these beverages, because that's really what's required to get prices down, to get further adoption at the consumer level. We have in the Canadian market, our THC beverages, you know, are pricing at $5-$6 a can in some cases. And that certainly is going to inhibit widespread adoption.
Thank you for that. That's a very insightful answer. And Zach, jumping to competitiveness in the cannabis market, especially in the retail space, what strategies has Essendiol implemented to differentiate itself in crowded markets? And how do you plan to maintain your competitive edge?
Are you referring to Canada with that question?
Yeah.
Sure. Uh-huh. So we're now, I would say, starting to see evidence that the market is mature in Canada. We've reached in certain provinces a real saturation point in terms of retail locations. There hasn't been much limitation in the largest provinces in terms of the issuance of licenses. And we're starting to see numbers actually come down. If you look at if you ask yourself, what does top quartile performance really look like in Canada? It would be a door that's generating, you know, north of 2 million a year in sales. So you're seeing smaller footprints, you're seeing, you know, bigger numbers. We were enamored of the strategy that was built out by Alcanna and Nova with their Value Buds discount banner. At one point in time, a few years ago, that was a highly disruptive strategy. There are many different discount models out there today, and they continue to put pressure on independent stores. So we need to be competitive. The two biggest themes that we see that we need to play to when it comes to retail are really convenience and value. And so we offer great high quality products with great LP from great LP partners at competitive prices. With a great in-store experience, and we need to continue to refine that model to make sure we're serving the evolving taste of the consumer.
Thank you. Super clear. And I mean, staying on the competitive or at least, yeah, maybe new markets and international markets, what do you think of the US market attractive right now with the potential rescheduling of cannabis maybe around the corner?
So that's a very broad question. I would say that We have our hands full, and we have somewhat of a captive pipeline that is driven by the credit deployment that we've managed in both the U.S. and Canada. And so we are currently in the midst of helping manage the restructuring of two different U.S. vehicles right now. One would be Parallel, which has exposure to Florida, Massachusetts, Texas, and then SkyMint, which is based in Michigan. And so what's attractive about the U.S.? I mean, the simple high-level answer would be that states where you've got limited licensing and very high prices are obviously more attractive than markets where you've got saturation, oversupply, and extremely low margins where you're seeing competitors fail. So Florida would be an example of that, where in the case of Certera, you're a top five operator with the opportunity to grow. Those operations are being turned around. There's been some material improvement, but a lot more is required. And so we need to focus on really continuing to get our own house in order and earning the right to take risk in additional markets from here. But the opportunity we have with our existing platform, we view as very significant today.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Zach, that's super interesting. You know, and to kind of wrap up here, man, I'd love to just level set a little bit on the Canadian market. You know, something I think there are a lot of different opinions of in terms of the cannabis side, but how do you all view the market in terms of Sundial and SNDL in regards to the consumer? Let me dive a little further into that question. It's a very, as you said, broad question. I'm curious, you know, brands wise, flowers wise, you know, market to market wise, is it growing? Is Canada growing? Is the opportunity becoming more attractive? Is it starting to mature? I'm just curious to get a little bit more of a level set on that, you know, the national landscape of cannabis in general from the Canadian standpoint.
It's a great question. So taking a top-down approach to this, look at what's happening in the cannabis space in Canada relative to broader retail in Canada. We saw last year OTC sales or retail sales growing at about 11%. And that would be compared to an aggregate growth rate for retail in Canada of about 3%. So is it growing? Yes. We could argue about the pace of growth from here, but you also have tailwinds from immigration and other dynamics that will continue to grow the consumer base on a dollar basis and likely a dollar per capita basis. You do have some crosswinds here with pricing versus volumes that will probably drive some volatility over time. But is it growing? I think the answer is yes, it has, and we'll see what the path looks like from here. But this is either side of a $5 billion market at retail today. What's interesting about the Canadian market is, yes, it's small. You were talking about just over 40 million people, so not that much larger than, say, the state of California by comparison. But you have this microcosm of a case study where there's a federally legal market. And if you want an example of what happens when you let interstate commerce flourish, in our case, it would be sort of interprovincial. There's a lot to look at when it comes to Canada and what advantages exist in different parts of the supply chain, across the country and through the models of different competitors. I've been calling for the last two quarters, effectively saying that the Canadian market is troughing. I think there's a lot of very negative and cynical views about the Canadian market that are based on old facts, even those that date back to sort of the bubble period when Canada was first legalizing and there was, you know, a lot made of this, the access to capital that Canadian entities could have versus, U.S. MSOs that had stronger fundamentals but were forced to be listed OTC or on Canadian exchanges. Look, we're well past that today. You're seeing attrition from the space. We're finally seeing wholesale prices start to lift their heads up and move upwards. And we're seeing that in everything from the lowest value trim up to, you know, grade A flower. I would say that the overhang in the market is slowly being worked through. The excess cultivation activity is starting to become muted. And this speaks to improved opportunities for both producers and, I believe, retailers over time. Today, in the current market, if you look across the chain, it would really be the downstream players, the scale retail players that are enjoying the best economics. But we believe in a future for Canada where this sector likely looks and takes the form, some form of an oligopoly, where strong licensed producers and cultivators of cannabis products are profitable on a stabilized basis. And we think that that's not too far away. It'll happen over the next 2 years.
I love that. And I got to ask, man, Benzinga's thinking about bringing another cannabis event back north. Do you think it's a good idea? Should we bring that investor interest right back to Toronto, to Ontario, to, who knows, Vancouver? I've never been to Vancouver. I'd like to go at some point. But it sounds like overall there's some optimism. That's exciting. I love that. Awesome.
Zach, I don't want to overstate it, Elliot. There's a lot of trauma and pain still in this market. Last year, a huge percentage of the CCAA filings in Canada were actually from cannabis companies. So still a lot to work through, but we feel that we're very well positioned and really looking to the horizon, past some of this pain to a different future.
Awesome. Awesome, my friend. Well, thank you very much. Any last words about SNDL, about, you know, the quarter, about what's ahead, innovation, anything else we can look for from you or that we should know about what you all just accomplished?
Look, we are definitely a work in progress. Again, letting our numbers speak for themselves. 2024 promises to be a very active year. Our teams are head down. I'm really pleased with the progress that our leadership team is making to bring discipline to the business and drive better talent density. So more to come, and I look forward to sharing that with you guys along the way.
Looking forward to it as well, my friend. Thank you very much for being with us. Pato Little, Elliot Lane here with Zach George, CEO of SNDL. Stay tuned for the next one. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, boys.
Thank you, Zach. Have a good one. We'll be right back.